Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we are ready to begin. This is the planning. This is the Palm Beach Transportation Planning Agency. It's Thursday, June 16th. It's 9 a.m. And I'd like to call for a roll call, please.
At this time, oh, that is so loud. I'm sorry. At this time, I'm only asking those board, can you lower this, please? I'm only asking those board members attending in person to state here when I call your name. If you're an alternate here on behalf of a representative, please state so. Steve Wilson is absent. Yvette Drucker?
Here.
Andy Thompson is absent at this time. Angela Cruz? Shelley Petrolia?
Cruz is here.
Oh, thank you. Shelley Petrolia?
Here.
Joel Flores?
Present.
Jim Kretzky is absent. Ronaldo Diaz?
Christopher McVoy, alternate, present.
Joni Brinkman?
Here.
Catherine Waldron is absent. Melissa McKinley is absent. Maria Marino?
Here.
Maria Sachs is absent. Greg Weiss?
Here.
Shirley Lanier is absent. Fred Pinto?
Here.
Michael Napoleon?
Here.
Christy Fox? Joseph Peduzzi? Chelsea Reed? Robert Weinroth?
Here.
We have a quorum in person, Mr. Chair.
Very good. All right, let's move on to the invocation and pledge of allegiance. And I understand that Andy Thompson is on the line, so we're going to ask him to do the invocation. I'm going to ask Mayor Petrolia to do the pledge.
Mayor, we are so thankful for the chance that we have to gather together once again to conduct the business of the people of this great county. And as we do that, we ask for wisdom, for servant's heart, and for humility in making decisions for the betterment of our community. I am not Mayor Wilson. I could never deliver an invocation quite as good as he does, but I will end by saying one of the phrases that he commonly says, which is, for all those who are gathered here, we're not strangers to each other, but perhaps friends who have not yet met. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Very good. Thank you, Mayor Petrolia and Councilman Thompson. And let's go ahead and get Councilman Thompson and the others who are with us virtually approved as attending. Who do we have online that would like to attend? Margie.
That's much better, I think, actually.
And you'll show that the vice chair has arrived.
Yes. I have Catherine Waldron, who is attending a meeting in Fort Lauderdale until 9:30 and would like to be permitted a virtual attendance when she joins. And I can note that in the minutes when she joins. Okay. Andy Thompson is needed at home as a caregiver and is requesting virtual participation, and he is on the line. I also have Melissa McKinley and Shirley Lanier that are under the weather and asking for virtual participation. They're just not on the line at this time.
Very good. All right. Are there any objections to them participating virtually? Seeing none, all in favor, all opposed. Show that is unanimously approved. Those people will be now part of our meeting as long as we have a physical quorum here.
Yes, sir.
Very good. All right. Let's move on.
And I do have a modification to the agenda, Mr. Chair.
Very good. Can you please let us know what that modification is, Margie?
Yes, sir. So in front of you, I did provide an updated agenda, which has a line item, which is consent item 1H7. I also provided printed copies, and Andy, I will email you a copy as well of a consent agenda item, which is a resolution to approve the TPA to reimburse travel for up to 12 participants to attend a peer exchange on September 29th through 30th in Austin, Texas. This came to the board previously, but we are asking for approval from instead of 5 board members to 7, as we've had more that have expressed interest. So that's on consent as 1H7.
Very good. Okay, I'm going to look for a motion to approve the modified agenda. I have Commissioner Second. Marino Second. Making a motion. I have Mayor Petrolia making a second. All in favor of the modified agenda, all opposed, show that is being approved unanimously. Okay, time for general public remarks. I will remind anybody who would like to make remarks to this board, please fill out a card so we can go ahead and acknowledge your request. Margie, do we have any cards?
Not at this time.
Very good. All right, then that takes us to a special presentation. As some of you may know, if you've been following our meetings at the Board of County Commissioners, we have Dump the Pump Day, June 17th. And I'm going to read you this declaration that has been signed by both our interim executive director, myself, and our vice chair, Chelsea Reed. It says, whereas public transportation is critical in transporting essential workers, reducing traffic congestion and air pollution, whereas the Palm Beach Transportation Planning Agency, TPA, vision is a safe, efficient, and connected multimodal transportation system, and whereas Palm Beach TPA encourages transit ridership as a safe, equitable, and sustainable mode of transportation, and whereas the American Public Transportation Association brings together hundreds of transit providers each year to raise awareness, encourage everyone to dump the pump, especially at $5 a gallon, and whereas Palm Tran, working closely with Palm Beach TPA, provides 21,000 rides daily. And as Clinton would tell you, that's more than go through our airport and are riding on Tri-Rail and Brightline, and is encouraging everyone to use the promo code VALUE in their Paradise Pass app on June 17th to ride for free. And whereas the SFRTA is promoting Tri-Rail with its $5 gets you there marketing campaign to promote the benefits of riding public transportation as cost of food, rent, gas, and anything else go up. Now, therefore, be it proclaimed by the governing board of the Palm Beach TPA assembled in regular session this 16th day of June, 2022, that tomorrow, June 17th, is hereby proclaimed Dump the Pump Day. So we are going to do a quick photo op. Would you kindly come up, Chelsea?
And while they are doing the photo op, I just want to note for the record that Commissioner Peduzzi has joined us in person.
And having taken delivery of my newest electric vehicle, I have dumped the pump, and I am very happy to drive by gas station, I must tell you. All right. Now, with that behind us, it's time for an update on the executive director recruitment. Is Mr. Slavin on the phone? Robert?
I am here. Yes.
Could you turn up the volume?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we're just working on our volume at this end.
All right.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
We have, since we last spoke, we have processed, we had 7 candidates, I think, when I reported to you last a couple of weeks ago. At this point, we have 6. I've interviewed them all by phone. Next week, Mayor Flores and I will be interviewing them over Zoom. The 6, all but one have Florida experience. All but one have Florida experience. 3 of them have experience running TPAs in Florida. One of them is a State Department of Transportation director in a state in the West and has been held a similar position, works for governors. One is runs a metropolitan planning agency in a major city in the Midwest, but has Florida experience. He's worked in Pasco and Manatee County. They, three of them have worked for with your organization. One of them does works for you now, and two others are who are in South Florida have worked for you folks in the past. One of them is a PE and a IACP, two are IACPs, two are PEs. One of those PEs is an IACP. At any rate, I've provided Mayor Flores with the background of his candidates so that he'll be able to have that information, have the information of their resumes and some summary information.
They are. I know what you're
saying. Mr. Slavin, can you give us a timeline? We have been certainly without a full-fledged director here for some time. What are we looking at as far as the continuation of this process?
We should have the interviews conducted by next week. May reduce a group by one or two, but once those interviews are conducted, we can arrange for interviews there with you folks. We will begin the background work now. We have few enough people on the group, so we can do that. So we're not waiting for that to be done. So the answer to your question is after next week, when the mayor and our interviews and my interviews are done, are completed with these folks, we'll know who we're dealing with, and we can go ahead and arrange for the completion of the project.
All right. And just to update the board, at the last executive committee meeting, we made the decision to have Mayor Flores act as our liaison between the executive recruiting firm of Slavin Management and this body, at least until we can get these number of applicants winnowed down to a number that we're going to be able to deal with as a board. So Mayor Flores, you'll continue in your role as a liaison with Mr. Slavin.
Absolutely. I think we'll do the interviews early next week, and then we should be able to move forward to the next step.
Very good. All right. Any questions, Vice Chair?
I just want to put some numbers out there. So our next executive committee meeting will be on July 13th. If we can make a decision that day and get it done in time, the TPA board agenda will go out on the 14th so that we could have this decided by the 14th of July as a board. Because if we don't, we're off in August, and then we won't come back again until September. And so we're making this last even longer. And with the way things are going with attrition, with the instability of an organization that is in flux, I think it behooves us to do all we can to get this done in that timeline. So deciding on the 13th, bringing it to the board on the 14th, and getting this done.
Mr. Slavin, is that a timeline you think that we can work with?
Yes, it's a generous timeline.
All right, yes. Then that's going to be our goal, to try and get this thing resolved by July 14th. All right, and I don't see any other cards up. Do we have any hands up, Margie?
No, Mr. Chair, and I will note for the record that Commissioner McKinley has joined us virtually.
Okay, very good. Welcome, Commissioner McKinley. I hope you feel better. Okay. I'll take, seeing no further comments on this issue, does anybody on the board have any comments on any issue? Seeing no cards, we will move on to the next item, and that's a report from our interim director, Ms. Nielsen.
Great. Well, good morning, everyone. I wanted to start off by giving a staff update and welcome Greg Gabriel as our new lead planner transit coordinator and also liaison for our Transportation Disadvantaged Local Coordinating Board. Greg's been with us for 4 years as a planner too, and so he's recently promoted to this position, and we're excited for him to take on the new role.
Congratulations.
Also, we have our long-range transportation plan coordinator, Connor. He's running a little late today, but he's bidding us farewell to go work for a consulting firm, and we're very sad about that, but we wanted to say goodbye to him. He was a great planner. He's been with us for about a year, but lives in Fort Lauderdale, true transit advocate, rode Brightline every day. But we're sad to see him go. Wanted to congratulate the town of Jupiter. I joined them for their Vision Zero resolution on June 7th to establish the goal of zero traffic related fatalities and serious injuries. So we're really excited about that. And as we did the proclamation earlier, just a little while ago, tomorrow is Dump the Pump Day. So please try transit. We have lots of options: PalmTran, TriRail, Brightline, trolleys, local circulators. We encourage you to try transit. It's a nationally celebrated day since 2006. And PalmTran's actually offering the promo code VALUE in their Paradise Pass, so you can ride for free tomorrow. We did a couple months ago, we had a conversation about rail safety, and we've created a handout that's here with us today that has on the back a map of the rail lines in our county, so that if you do see an issue or have a concern, you can identify which one it is. And on the front, it has the contact information to reach out for more information. Our FDOT is also working on a rail safety action plan right now, and they've submitted that to the Federal Railroad Administration for approval. We included the link here for more information, but we are going to be hearing from them later on today for an update on their rail safety initiatives as an information item. And we've sent out some information about the Port of Palm Beach. They are updating their master plan. There's been some public involvement workshops already, but there's also a survey online through July 7th if you'd like to provide any input on that. And also wanted to give an update. We are planning to have a key partner workshop downtown for an intermodal coordination workshop here on August 25th. We're still working out the details, but basically trying to get all of the players, both public and private, together here to figure out what are all the different plans that are happening downtown, identify that, get us all looking in the same direction. We're going to have a pre-workshop and a post-workshop, as well as next steps to get us all moving in the same direction, because there's a few different groups trying to solve issues downtown, but we want to all work in lockstep. And one of those next steps would be evaluating the potential for a tunnel. And there's, again, just a reminder that we encourage our board members to attend transportation conferences. And there is a Floridians for Better Transportation summer camp happening. It moves around the state, but it just so happens to be happening in July 6th through 8th in Boca Raton. So some of you have expressed interest in that, but just wanted to remind you that that's happening. And then last but not least, we have created a mobility options video. Melissa on our team has done a fantastic job with that, and we'd like to share that with you. This was an item that we identified in our fiscal year 2022 strategic plan that we wanted to do. Actually, I think it was Mayor Pinto who mentioned that there wasn't really a one-stop shop to see what are all our options. So we created this video, and we'd like to share that with you now. So we're going to play it. It's a brief video.
Palm Beach County is home to beautiful beaches, diverse culinary experiences, exciting entertainment, and more. Getting around to experience it all is easy with each of the county's mobility options, from buses to trains and everything in between. PalmTran is Palm Beach County's public transit system. With buses from Jupiter to Boca Raton and Palm Beach to the Glades, PalmTran offers 32 routes to take you across the county and on demand with the Go Glades service. Paratransit services are also available through PalmTran Connection. TriRail is South Florida's commuter train connecting Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade counties. TriRail offers 6 stops from Mangonia Park to Boca Raton within Palm Beach County. Trains run every day and connect all the way to Miami International Airport. For a higher speed service, check out Brightline. With stations from West Palm Beach to Fort Lauderdale and Miami, you can experience all of South Florida without the stress of traffic. Be sure to check out the first and last mile connections across the county too, including Brightline Plus and Bright Bike, the West Palm Beach Trolleys, and local circulators like Circuit in West Palm Beach and Freebie in Delray Beach. If you need door-to-door service, local taxi providers and on-demand services like Uber and Lyft can take you where you need to go. In addition, try walking and bicycling in our beautiful county as an active and healthy mode of transportation. Next time you're in Palm Beach County, try one of the many multimodal transportation options to get around. With so many choices, it's easy to go car-free. To learn more about all of the mobility options in Palm Beach County, head to palmbeachtpa.org/mobility.
That was great.
Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. All right. I see a card up. Vice Mayor Weiss, you are recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for the update, Valerie. And also, the video is great. Although I did notice you had a jaywalker at the end. So, I mean, City of West Palm, maybe you can follow up on that. Couple things. FYI, on the downtown intermodal coordination plan on 8/25, we have a BCC meeting, and it starts at 9:30 in the morning. So if you can accommodate in the afternoon, that would probably allow some of us to attend if we're able to. And then, and you brought up the issue of the railways, and I know last week we had a train issue. It was about a 2-mile train that had a brake issue, and then they had to stop, I guess, review the train each car, and so it closed down a number of intersections for substantial amount of time. Is obviously there's nothing can happen when you have an issue like that, but it creates, obviously, in addition to the traffic issues, or public safety issues as well, and whether it happened in West Palm Beach or it happened in any of the communities along the rail, we have so many roadways that cross it, you know. I don't know if there's any follow-up or anything that can be done. But.
Well, Vice Mayor, I think that's one of the reasons why we're exploring the idea of a tunnel on Okeechobee, with the idea that those points of conflict between auto travel and rail travel, especially with Okeechobee having the FEC and CSX tracks, I think this is something we're going to have to grapple with as more and more activity is seen on our rails. I mean, we're seeing more freight going north to south. We're seeing, obviously, Brightline going with more of their trains going through. And obviously, Amtrak and Tri-Rail are using the other train tracks. So I think this is something that we're going to have to look at going forward, how we're going to make these points less contentious for motor travel. And also, you know, there are going to be situations where there are going to be accidents which are going to stop these trains, and there'll be obviously inspections of the situation, which may require the equipment sits there for a prolonged period of time. So I don't think there's an easy answer, and I think this is something that we're going to have to look at more carefully as we get more and more travel along our rails.
Well, one of the things I think certainly could be done is a better communication system, because I found out about it by seeing a post on Nextdoor. There, I know we have the county has a countywide alert system, and I assume I know West Palm Beach. I know the town of Palm Beach has alert systems. I don't know about the other municipalities, but I think there's an opportunity to at least alert the public. And if people are having to walk and you're having to walk around a 2-mile train, I mean, that's substantial. So I think the more we can, you know, when these things do happen, as quickly as possible, get that information out to assist people. And I would assume fire rescue departments would want to know for rerouting their vehicles and everything else. So it's, you know, there's a substantial impact, and I think communication would certainly help at the very least.
Your comments are duly noted. I have the vice chair's card up next.
I just wanted to do a shout out to staff. That was a great video. And I know that when you bring things like that in-house, it saves us money as well, as opposed to outsourcing it. And the voiceover was especially lovely. So thank you guys. It was wonderful to see. And I think we'll be able to share it with our residents and they'll learn a lot. Thank you.
Absolutely. Very professional quality. I commend the agency for doing that. And I understand on a shoestring. Mayor Pinto.
Yeah, two things. Great job on that film, and I'm certainly going to make sure that gets made available to the citizens of my city. It's, I think, good information for people to learn what are the options and begin to get an interest in the opportunities for alternative opportunities for traveling rather than having to take their car. So definitely going in the right direction. I have a question for the chair. You mentioned the tunnel project. How far along is that happening? Because I think it is an important item, and the timing of that getting done is now, really, as soon as possible.
So I'll chime in. It has been evaluated in the past a couple times, and it ended up not being recommended. However, things have changed, and so we are having this workshop, and we'll plan. We hadn't set the time yet, but we're going to plan to do it in the afternoon. We're going to have on the August 25th. We're going to bring together the public and private stakeholders to figure out all the different plans that are happening, because now we have a UF, we have the Transit Village, we have related with their mobility vision, the Mobility Coalition. There's a lot of different things going on. So we want to make sure that all the players are in the room so that we understand, because the tunnel and this pedestrian plaza or pedestrian bridge is also being discussed with the convention center and the Discover the Palm Beaches. So we just want to get everybody together and then figure out next step. Let's reevaluate this again and figure out how it all fits in with everybody and everybody looking in the same direction. So that's the plan. The reason we're doing August 25th is because we are bringing in, we're having our consultants help us facilitate that workshop, but we also are bringing in Gabe Klein, who has worked on this, has been involved with this discussion in the past with the city of West Palm Beach. And he's one of our consultants. Is he's going to also help facilitate that conversation.
Thank you. I think also the issue is money, and our interim executive director is looking for money to finance a feasibility study. I've had one-on-one conversations with both Related and with the city of West Palm Beach Mayor James, and there seems to be an appetite for at least going to the next step, finding out what we're talking about as far as how we would deal with those things like the Kravis and the convention center, how you would still have access to them by and still be able to reroute that traffic underneath. So there are certainly issues involved. If you're watching the news, you'll see Fort Lauderdale is also looking at options to take travel under. I think it's a much better option than trying to move pedestrians over the traffic, because they tend to ignore the opportunity to walk over traffic. And unless they're right there at the point where the pedestrian bridge is, they will ignore it. But if we rechannel the travel of the motor vehicles, we're in a much better situation. And frankly, there is an exciting opportunity of what to do with that space if we were able to move the traffic under ground. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there, and I'm looking forward to looking and finding some funding that I know Valerie is looking for every minute of the day so that we can get that feasibility study done.
Yeah, one opportunity could be a potential raise grant for the next round that becomes available if we get all the partners together for that, to pursue a planning grant for the feasibility. Also, if the board as a whole, if this is a priority, we can work with FDOT, because Okeechobee is an FDOT roadway. So we can look at that for feasibility as well.
Very good. Mayor, are you done?
Thank you. Oh, yes.
Okay. Commissioner Fox, you are next up.
Thank you. I too wanted to say how great the video was. So nice to see so many highlights from downtown West Palm Beach. And I just
Commissioner, could you just pull that mic a little closer? Sure. Thank you.
Can you hear me now? I just also wanted to take a minute to introduce you to another new mobility option in West Palm Beach. It's called Rose Trolley. And they're an electric vehicle that's very similar to Circuit, but they're going to the geography. geographic boundary is a bit wider. Circuit is mostly downtown. Rose Trolley will be going to the historic Northwest, Pleasant City, Northwood, as well as downtown to help areas of our city where car ownership might not be as prevalent, and we have older residents who might not drive. So I just wanted to introduce this body to this new option. It's called Rose Trolley. They have a website right now that is rosetrolleyrides.com, and they, in the next few weeks, will have an app similar to Circuit where you can just request a ride. So just wanted to let you know about that great option. I had a chance to ride it the other day, and it's very similar to Circuit, except they're pink. So
very good. That certainly supports our ambition to everybody dump the pump. I would say also our friends at Brightline are making great strides as far as dealing with first mile, last mile, or for them, it's first 5 miles, last 5 miles. I've had the opportunity along with Valerie to go down to Miami, which means I drive down to Fort Lauderdale, park the car in their parking lot, and then get picked up in Miami, wherever we're going within 5 miles, they pick us up. In the situations which has happened already where they don't have a driver available to pick us up, I get a coupon on my iPhone for $15 to pick up a Lyft or an Uber. So they really are going out of their way to try and, you know, listening to a couple of presentations by Brightline, they talk about it as friction. That the to get you out of your car and onto a fixed route, there's that friction of, you know, what are you going to do? How are you going to get to that point? And I think Brightline is making great strides in trying to deal with that. I know I am very excited about the opportunity to start taking Brightline in Boca. They're telling us that that is probably going to be November, and I will probably be like my predecessor, Steve Abrams, except he's on the Tri-Rail and I'll probably be on the Bright Line and enjoying my commute to West Palm Beach that way. So I think we are moving in the right direction. I think that the service that you're talking about, Commissioner, is great. And we need to see more of them. And I think as we're urbanizing and we have a critical mass of people downtown, we have the opportunity to have these public transportation systems becoming vibrant and being able to justify the expense. Valerie, you wanted to follow up?
Sure, yeah. I just wanted to mention a couple things. Thank you, Commissioner, for letting us know about that new service. That's very exciting. We'll follow up and make sure that's on our website. And I also wanted to mention that a next step from this mobility options video is that in the next year, we want to do brief, short videos to take you on a ride with us on each of these modes of transportation so you can see in a brief way what the experience is like to go ride Palmtran, buy a ticket and get around. So on each of these, that's a next step to that. I also just wanted to follow up on Commissioner Weiss's, Vice Mayor Weiss's comment regarding the rail safety. We'll make sure that we do have a presentation later this morning, but we will make sure that we send out this handout that has the contact information. And if that can be shared, these are the contacts if there ever is an issue or a safety concern to reach out to, and we'll send that via email to everyone and have it on our website as well as a point of contact. Thank you.
And on the issue of the video, there are multiple opportunities where these videos, maybe about 30 seconds or so, would be useful and embraced. I know at the Boca Raton Bowl, we buy time from ESPN. And so there certainly would be an opportunity for that to be shown to a worldwide audience, which ESPN has for the Boca Raton Bowl. I'm sure the Honda would do likewise. So let's see if we can't have a smaller version and reach out to the TDC and see how we can put that out there in the Sports Commission. Vice Mayor McCoy.
Thank you. I too add my support for the video. I think it's great. For the second version, I would just encourage a few more inclusions like electric bikes, some of the electric scooters, even the, I don't even know what they're called, but the thing with one wheel, like an electric skateboard. I see a lot of people starting to use these alternate modes, and they're electric and they're pretty low power, and that's all good. So it adds mobility, and some of them are small enough you can take them to help do your extra last mile, first mile things and take it onto a train. Other thought on the, to follow up on Vice Mayor Weiss's comment with the trains, Can TPA put any pressure on the train companies themselves that it's their responsibility to get the communication out as quickly as possible? Obviously, for public safety, it's a pretty big deal if a 2-mile train. Well, we and I imagine they already do that, but anything we can do to encourage?
We do have a member of the SFRTA board here, and I'm sure she can carry the message back.
Sorry, I will. And we have a meeting a week from Friday.
And we can certainly, we have communications with Brightline as well. And I think that they understand that they have to be a good partner. And but, you know, the real problem is that there are not many places that you can cross over or under the tracks right now. I know in Boca, you know, the overpass we have has been, closed for the last year. So it becomes problematic. Even if you have the information, all it tells you to do is stay home and have another cup of coffee because you're not going to be able to get from east to west. So, you know, this is going to be an issue we need to deal with. All right. I see no more cards up. Do we have any hands raised? Cassidy?
No.
Okay. Very good. All right. We're going to move on now to the consent agenda. And I'm going to, again, call your attention to item 7, since this was an add-on. And this is just to change the number of participants that would be able to participate in the peer exchange, allowing that we would be having 7 from the TPA potentially joining us on this trip. If there's anything that you want to pull from the consent agenda, Mayor Flores, did you want to
just make a motion?
Okay, I have a motion by Mayor Flores to approve the consent agenda as submitted. I have a second by Councilman Napoleon. All in favor, all opposed, show that unanimous, but that Mayor Petrolia and Vice Chair Reed are away from their Vice Mayor Cruz is also absent. So, Vice Chair, would you like to approve the consent agenda? Okay, you can show Vice Chair Reed has approved the consent agenda as well. All right, we have the consent agenda under our belt. Let's move on to our next action item, and that's going to be a motion to adopt the resolution approving Amendment 4 to TPA's fiscal year TIP. And I'm going to ask for Jason to make a presentation to us.
Hi, good morning, everyone. So I have 2 back-to-back action items for the TIP today, this morning. So the first one is the amendment number 4 to the current TIP that we're operating under, and that's for fiscal year 22 through 26. And this amendment is to request to modify one project by FDOT, as well as add a new project to this transportation improvement program. As a reminder to the group, this is a action item and will require a roll call vote at the end of the presentation and discussion. So before I get into the 2 projects that we'll discuss as part of this amendment, I just want to point out that amendments come before you for particular projects when certain actions are taken. And in these particular cases, a new project is being added to the TIP and that requires an amendment. So that's the second project. The first project is being advanced a couple of years. And so that's moving some of the funds around and advancing them. And that also requires an amendment. So
this is a result of the bipartisan infrastructure bill, or where's this money coming from?
It's ARPA, it's American Rescue Plan Act funds. And so that's kind of the one-off funds that have been provided to the state and to the district and now comes to us in by way of advancing projects.
And if we don't advance, then we will lose that money, right?
I would think, yeah, it'll go somewhere because the DOT wants to put it somewhere and they've chosen this and we'll gladly accept it because it improves.
Okay. So it's basically accept it or we'll find another home for it.
It would definitely be wise to accept it.
Okay. Well, I'm not asking you to tell us what we should do, but I just want to let people know here that it's really a decision to take the money or let someone else have it.
Or if you have, yes. And if there's any additional questions, we can always follow up with DOT to get.
Okay, I didn't mean to sidetrack you, Jason.
Sure. So by taking an action today on this amendment, these are the 2 projects that will be impacted in the Transportation Improvement Program. And no other project that is in the Transportation Improvement Program will be impacted by taking action today on this amendment. And so this is just a little layout of what it looks like in the TIP document for the project page. And you see that the funds are being moved from 2025 to 2023. And the funding source is being changed to ARPA, like I mentioned before, American Rescue Plan Act funds. And so those funds have recently become available. The state DOT at Tallahassee, the central office, they kind of look at what projects could be advanced given their scope and timeline and safety elements. And they've chosen this particular project given those considerations and advanced this project to 2023. Just a location map of where this is along I-95 and Belvedere Road. You see the map on the right with the star that indicates the off-ramp that's being improved. And this is I-95 out Belvedere Boulevard off-ramp. And so some of the project details here of what's happening as part of this project is lengthening the southbound off-ramp auxiliary lane on Belvedere Road, as well as some resurfacing and landscaping will be added, as well as a sidewalk on the south side of Belvedere Road. With this advancement of this particular project, the construction will begin in late 2023 and then anticipated completion in late 2024. The second project is I-95 at PGA Boulevard on the westbound section. And this is a new project being added to the Transportation Improvement Program. And this particular project has a few elements to highlight here. And this is to mill and resurface a ramp with high friction surface treatment and some feedback signs, speed feedback signs, and extending the guardrail, all a collection of safety improvements to improve this particular location on PGA Boulevard and the I-95 off-ramp. So this is being added to the TIP at the request of FDOT. And those two projects encompass the whole TIP amendment being before you today. Just to go over the advisory committees, I bring all of these action items through all of the committees. All of the committees have approved it. There was some dissenting votes from West Palm Beach and Boynton Beach, but we're coordinating with West Palm Beach, putting them in connection with the project managers with FDOT, just to close the loop and make sure everybody's involved in the project. Because it's being advanced a couple of years, the Belvedere project, they wanted to know more about it because it's being advanced so soon. And so we're coordinating with FDOT to just put everybody in coordination so to allow West Palm Beach to provide input on the project. And with that, I'll take any questions.
Very good. Thank you. All right. Two things before we get into our discussion. And this is, for our friends in West Palm Beach. Paul, the approval of this amendment would have no effect on any other project in the TIP that's already been approved?
Correct.
Okay. Not that this is going to change anybody's vote in West Palm Beach, but at least that just takes that off your head. All right. Commissioner Peduzzi.
And thank you for addressing the city's concerns, I guess. Any more information that you can give us? I mean, the project certainly doesn't seem objectionable on its face, but I'm concerned that the city is feeling that there's this lack of coordination and communication. Has it been addressed since the time that these advisory boards met and gave their recommendation?
So it's only been a week or two since those particular advisory committee meetings, but we have put FDOT project managers and West Palm Beach staff in coordination, in connection with each other. And so the project manager for FDOT will be reaching out and providing the additional information and coordinating with West Palm Beach. So that's going to happen before any future actions happen. So the West Palm Beach will have ample time to provide input and just get to know the project. One of the major questions was, let's see the plans of what's actually happening because it's being advanced so soon. And that was the first order of businesses, at least get the plans to West Palm Beach so you can provide input and comment.
I'll chime in. Yes, we have connected the staff member with the PM and ensured that they are receiving the notifications, because FDOT sends it to someone at the city, and that sometimes always doesn't go to every person. So we made sure to follow up and connect the representative on the committees to make sure they're receiving that information as well.
I appreciate those assurances. As I said, I don't necessarily think that anything in the proposed project is particularly objectionable. I just want to make sure that if the city is feeling that there's a lack of coordination, that's being addressed. And I would think that as long as that was their concern, and it looks like that was their only concern, that I'd probably feel comfortable supporting it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Very good. Vice Mayor.
Yeah, I just wanted to chime in on this. First off, as somebody who is a regular user of that off-ramp, I appreciate FDOT improving the safety of it. It is a tricky off-ramp. You have to slow down very quickly, and then you go into a circular turn. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen vehicles have slid off that off-ramp because they're approaching too fast. And this is going to extend that lane. I also will just share that FDOT did do a public outreach on this project. I attended the meeting, but there was both a virtual meeting on it and an in-person meeting. It was open to the public, and members of the public were invited to comment on it and understand what in fact this project was about. And so I did participate in that. And I hopefully that communication is also getting through to the folks in the city of West Palm Beach so that they can participate as well. But FDOT did do outreach, at least to the public, on it. And so very much appreciate that. And they had an excellent presentation for it.
Thank you, Vice Mayor.
I will be supporting this.
Okay. Do we have any public comment?
No, Mr. Chair.
Do we have any hands raised?
No, Mr. Chair, you do have a 10 card up.
Vice Chair.
As we're about to vote on this, just keep in mind, anyone watching, always take a look at what's on the tip. There are some really exciting things that are on this aside from the two things that we just added, including electric buses for PalmTran, new bus shelters for PalmTran, bike lanes, separated bike lanes, sidewalks, all the things that we push for are on this tip. So if anyone's curious about it, we're not just doing these two items right now. It's a comprehensive list that the staff has been working on for a long time. So I encourage everyone to realize that this is it's a big iceberg, and we're hearing a little bit about the tip of it today. And so I'm just really excited about all the different projects and the local initiatives fundings and the transportation alternatives fundings that have all gone out that we've all worked hard on. So
this amendment's just the tip of the iceberg.
Just the tip of the tip.
With that being said, I'm looking for a motion to approve.
So moved.
I have a motion by Vice Chair, second by Councilman Napoleon. I'm going to call for roll call.
Steve Wilson is absent. Yvette Drucker?
Yes.
Andy Thompson?
Yes.
Angela Cruz is out of the room, so she'll be marked as absent. Shelley Petrolia is out of the room. She'll be absent. Joel Flores?
Yes.
Jim Kretzky is absent. Christopher McVoy?
Yes.
Joni Brinkman?
Yes.
Catherine Waldron has still not joined us, so she will be absent. Melissa McKinley?
Yes.
Maria Marino?
Yes.
Maria Sachs is absent. Greg Weiss?
Yes.
Shirley Lanier has not joined us, so she will be absent. Fred Pinto?
Yes.
Michael Napoleon?
Yes.
Christy Fox?
Yes.
Joseph Peduzzi?
Yes.
Chelsea Reed?
Yes.
Robert Weinroth?
Yes, crack open the champagne. We have a unanimous vote. Very good. All right, let's move on to item. Let's see, we have this motion to adopt a resolution approving the TPA's fiscal year 23-27 TIP. Jason?
This next item is the adoption of the new transportation improvement program that will take us into the new fiscal year 2023 through 2027. The basic distinction between the current TIP that we're operating under now and the new TIP that we'll be adopting is the addition of the new fifth year, the 2027 year, in this transportation improvement program, where we'll see new funding become introduced into the transportation improvement program and into the projects that we'll see in that document. And so the Transportation Improvement Program, this TIP document, is the funding mechanism that we utilize to fund all of the transportation projects within Palm Beach County. And that is part of our mission to collaboratively plan, prioritize, and fund the transportation system. And so this is the funding mechanism in which we do that. Because we're adopting a new TIP document as part of this action, this document is to be voted on as a whole and cannot be altered in any way other than through amendment. So if there was a project in this document that you would like to see changed in any way, that would have to come before this board through an amendment. And today you'll be taking an action of approving the document as a whole. And the development of this particular document begins with project development, where the TPA and all of our partners get together, look at the collection of projects that are evaluated for feasibility. We develop a list of priority projects, and those projects are derived from our grant programs for state road modifications, local initiatives, and transportation alternatives. When we hold those those grant cycles, we get a collection of projects that we approve here, and those projects go on to be provided to FDOT. FDOT then takes those projects, incorporates them into their draft tentative work program, provides us that list, and then at some point we begin to take their final snapshot of their work program and develop the TIP document that's here before you today. Now, previously, just to look at the timeline for how we get to this point, the draft TIP was provided as an informational item back in May, and that was an opportunity to kind of fine tune and review the document, provide input to it. And now we're here in June to formally adopt this document as a whole. And once it's adopted, we'll begin to operate it under it in the months to come. Another quick snapshot of this document in total, it's about $3.6 billion worth of funding in 5 years for all of the transportation projects that are envisioned to be completed here in Palm Beach County. The majority of those funds are in SIS capacity, so that's Strategic Intermodal System, and that encompasses I-95 and Turnpike. And Turnpike is kind of a self-funded agency in terms of a toll revenue collection agency that provides their own funding for their own projects. And being a state agency, you can see that in Strategic Intermodal System capacity section, the lion's share of the funds are state funds within that particular section of the TIP. And just to note, the local funds are often used, as you see here, for operation and maintenance of both roadways and transit. So in addition to the federal and state funds that are provided in this particular document, you see a lot of the local funds go to operation and maintenance of the facilities once they're built. And I'll briefly go over just a few of the categories or sections within the Transportation Improvement Program. The first is Strategic Intermodal System that I previously mentioned, with the lion's share of most of the funds. And taken independently, it's about $1.5 billion that make up this particular section, the Strategic Intermodal System. And in that, like I mentioned, Florida Turnpike widening is about $900 million of that $1.5 billion. And then just under that is about $587 million in I-95 interchange projects. And those are really the main trunk lines of the Strategic Intermodal System that take up most of the funds and are the ones that are receiving the most attention. And then we also have rest areas and PD&E studies to study future planning efforts and to improve the Strategic Intermodal System. So those are just some of the high-level categories within this section within the TIP. Next, I'll go over the state road modifications, which is one of our annual grant programs that we offer to all of the municipalities for state roads. And this has about $116 million programmed in it. And you see here just a quick breakdown of where those funds lay. And there's about $54 million for adding lanes and reconstructing roadways throughout the state road system. And inclusive of that is about almost $15 million in adding bike lanes, sidewalks, and pedestrian safety. And these are just multimodal elements that we advocate for and ask FDOT to incorporate when they improve the state roadway system. In addition to the, those two categories, lighting is about $23 million, and that does include the state Route 80 lighting. And then just behind that, there's about $7 million for transit shelters for PalmTran. The two competitive grant programs that we offer is Local Initiatives. That's the larger of the two. Local Initiatives has about $88 million programmed for this next 5 years, and there's about $43 million in bike lanes, bike paths, sidewalks, and a roundabout that make up the majority of about half of the funds in this particular section, followed by transit capacity projects. So as part of the grant program, we have awarded new rolling stock to SFRTA, as well as multiple electric buses to facilitate PalmTran's electric bus initiative to transition to electric buses. And lastly, there is about $22 million for transportation planning for planning studies on our UPWP. And this makes up all of our operating budget that you've seen before when you've adopted our UPWP, our operating document for the next 2 years, as well as planning studies, which is also included in that. So that's what makes up the local initiatives section of the TIP. The last one to review here is the Transportation Alternatives Grant Program, and that is the smallest of the three. It has about $10 million for the next 5 years. It's a three-year program, so these projects get implemented on a shorter time frame and are more frequent. And there's about $9 million, which is the majority of the funds for bike lanes, bike paths, sidewalks, and a pedestrian bridge. And that's the goal of the program, is to advocate for multimodal facilities. And that's exactly what it's doing here. And that's where all the funds are being programmed. In addition to that, there's transit shelters for PalmTran, and there's some lighting that are being programmed for El Rio Trail. Some changes that I've made since you've seen this in the May draft version is updating the transit funds. I coordinate with SFRTA and PalmTran to get their expected funding, revenues, and expenditures all the way out to 2027 and incorporate that into the document to give you a complete picture of how the transit funding is being allocated and what projects they're moving forward with, as well as updating local projects. I reach out to all of the municipalities and request from everyone to provide their local projects to include those in the document. It's something we do here at the TPA to try and give you a complete picture of all of the transportation projects that are happening here in Palm Beach County. It's not a requirement of the document, so to speak, but we want to get as many projects as possible in there just to show a complete picture and have it be a more holistic document for transportation projects. And I appreciate all of you that have reached out and provided projects.
Very good. Thank you, Jason, for the presentation.
Lastly is the added appendices items. There's performance measures that I've updated, as well as the public participation. Some through the months that it's been out for public review, others have provided public participation. That's incorporated in the document in the appendices. And lastly, the fiscal analysis that we do to kind of track the district dedicated revenues and the revenues that are collected in this county. They may go out of the county, but then they're received back by way of projects through programming projects here. And again, just to recap the advisory committee votes for this particular item, all of the advisory committees passed this document and voted to pass it. There was some dissenting votes that was from West Palm Beach for the State Route 7 extension on both the Technical Advisory Committee and the Vision Zero Action Committee. And with that, I'm looking for a motion to adopt.
Very good. Any discussion from the board? Okay. Vice Mayor?
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. Just a couple of comments. I am struck at looking at the budget, and I know this is not a time that we're modifying the thing, but it's a time to, you know, just think about it for future ones. The difference in the level of resourcing in the $1 billion range for some of the strictly individual car-oriented things and the size of the funding for things like alternate transportation. I mean, we're talking factors of 100 or factors of 1,000 difference in funding. I think we want to, in our move toward Vision Zero, in our move toward multimobile, let's always try to keep in mind that balance. And then I've had a probably 20, 25 year involvement with Grassy Waters. So I would add my voice to the concern about the State Road 7 extension, concern about that one.
Thank you, Vice Mayor. All right, I don't see any other cards up. Do we have any hands raised?
No, I will note for the record that Catherine Waldron has joined us in virtually.
Very good, thank you and welcome. Commissioner Waldron, we will let you vote on the next items coming before us. Do we have any public comment?
No, sir.
All right.
I'll make a motion. We adopt a resolution approving the TPA's fiscal year 23-27.
I have a motion by Commissioner Marino. I have a second by Councilman Napoleon. Your card's still up. You're good? Okay, very good. All right, we will have a roll call on this, and I'm not quite sure we're going to have a unanimous vote this time.
Steve Wilson is absent. Yvette Drucker?
Yes.
Andy Thompson?
Andy must be chasing his kids around.
Andy?
Gary?
Yes, now we can.
Yes.
Thank you. Angela Cruz? Yeah. Shelley Petrolia?
Yes.
Joel Flores?
Yes.
Jim Koretsky is absent. Christopher McVoy?
No, for the reasons stated on State Road 7.
Joni Brinkman?
Yes.
Catherine Waldron?
Yes.
Thank you. Melissa McKinley?
Yes.
Maria Marino?
Yes.
Maria Sachs is absent. Greg Weiss?
Due to the alignment of this State Road 7 extension, I'm supportive of the other projects, but I will be voting no.
Shirley Lanier has not joined us, so she'll be absent. Fred Pinto?
Yes.
Michael Napoleon?
Yes.
Christy Fox?
No, due to inclusion of funding for the State Road 7 extension.
Joseph Peduzzi?
No, due to inclusion of funding for the State Road 7 extension.
Chelsea Reed?
Yes.
Robert Weinroth?
Yes.
It passes with 4 opposed.
4 votes negative and
just giving them a sorry one.
Okay, very good. All right, show that as a motion to adopt has been approved.
13-4.
13-4. Very good. All right. That ends the action items. Just to let you know, if you have to depart, this is the point in which we have completed our action items. We're now, not that these aren't important, but we're now going to move on to the information items. And it's the Florida Rail Safety Initiatives. And I'm going to ask Ricky Fitzgerald to come on up and make a presentation.
Hopefully everyone can hear me. I'm virtual.
Yeah, you're here. We're going to hear you.
Okay, thank you. So thank you for allowing me to present to you today. I'm actually in Tallahassee. That's where my office is, in Tallahassee. Just to quickly introduce myself, Ricky Fitzgerald. I'm the manager for the Freight and Rail Office for Florida Department of Transportation, and that is statewide. And I do that for statewide. And we, of course, you know about our districts. You are probably working closely with District 4.
And I'm sorry.
So Ricky, let's get right into it.
Ricky, I'm sorry to interrupt you. If you're able to, so our board can see you, if you can turn your camera on for us, that would be greatly appreciated.
Okay. Okay, I could try. Hold on.
Yeah.
High tech.
Let me know if you.
Yep, we got it. Thank you so much.
All right. Okay. Here we go. So good morning again, everyone. Ricky Fitzgerald, so let's get started. So Rail safety has been a core part of FDOT's mission for years. Of course, you should know that. However, we have made an effort recently to provide more emphasis on showcasing all those ongoing efforts to allow greater collaboration with our partners. So we understand that we really need to start talking about what we do as when it comes to safety, specifically rail safety in this instance. Before we tried to address anything, though, we had to really look at back and validate the challenges and who can we help, can get us to help us address them. So this is an approach that we decided we should really do, go and define that challenge, figure out where we are having these challenges, and identify any partners that can really help support us in pushing forward and doing better with rail safety. Next slide, please. So you see here, this map shows an example of the type of highway rail incident density analysis that we use to gauge our challenging areas. These are updated periodically to reflect the latest data from that we get from FRA. Unfortunately, the higher population area, some of the at-grade crossing, you can see in the south and central Florida, there's a greater chance of conflict between the users. Next slide, please. As I was talking about partnership here, just to show you how we, all the partners that are involved, or the stakeholders, we absolutely have a role in rail safety, but it isn't as simple as the highway mode where we are largely in control. In rail, it's slightly different because we don't own all the infrastructure. Rail safety must be based on a collaboration between partners that all have to play a role. Our role in solutions may be unique depending on if we own the rail corridor, like I said earlier, or a highway crossing at the rail, or none of the above. So that's why it's kind of critical that we have good partnerships identifying the partners. Next slide, please. You may have heard about the four E's. Traditionally, there are four major approaches recognized amongst the safety professional as those with a potential impact on safety. These are the same categories used in our strategic highway safety plan. So on the highway side, they use these four E's. We typically use the three of them, and that's engineering, enforcement, and education. These are referred to as the four E's of safety. So what I want to do on the next few slides is kind of showcase a few example solutions implemented in each of these categories. Next slide, please. Let's start with the engineering solution and something that we do really well. That's what we do here at FDOT. And I think what this may be for you is just some awareness of what we actually do already. And we want to continue to build on that and add layers to make it even better. So these are just samples of some of the type of solutions that FDOT has implemented. District staff, they get into a little bit more specifics. That's something that you may see that is closer to you from District 4. Top of the list, we have our Section 130 crossing improvements. So Section 130, this is a federal program. And what it involves is it's an ongoing federal program to increase crossing safety. It's a critical program, simply not enough funding to meet all identified statewide needs, however, but it's a critical program for our crossing and hazard elimination at the crossings. Next, we have our open and closure program. Again, another ongoing state program that facilitates crossing closures. It's important about closures when it comes to rail safety. We'd like to make sure if their crossings are going to be closed to increase safety, remove redundancy. And that's one of the best measures that we can use to actually closing a crossing. Next, we have our dynamic envelope. If you remember, we pushed out a campaign for our dynamic envelope, our STRIDE campaign that we pushed out. We managed to do 620 as a part of that campaign we did. Preliminary data shows that more vehicles are no longer stopping in the foul zone at more than 40% of the crossings with the dynamic envelopes we install. So that was important. That was actually helpful for us. But I also want to say that along with that program, it was not just about putting down the markings and the signage. It was also about drawing awareness and making sure that folks understood what it was about rail safety around rail infrastructure. Next, we have our preemption inventory effort to establish which crossing operational and where they may be issues to address in partnership with roadway traffic ops. So a preemption system is essentially where you have an adjacent or nearby intersection, a signalized intersection. And so there's a connection, a communication connection between that signalized intersection and that crossing so that there is no queuing over the crossing based on what phase the signal is at the intersection. So this is important to reduce that queuing over the crossing. So we then did an inventory of that to see where we had some operational issues with the preemption systems that existed. Next, we are developing a manual to establish design standards for crossing on higher speed corridors. And let me explain that a little bit more. So we have identified standards for train travels at speed, traveling at speeds up to 79 miles per hour. And then we also have something for 110 and greater when it comes to design standards at the crossing. But we really don't have kind of a gray area somewhere between that 80 and that 110. So we are actually establishing design standards for those corridors that may have those train speeds at that level. Next, we have our grants. Partner on a RAISE grant application for grade crossing safety improvements, preparing several application that includes crossing and safety improvements on state-owned rail corridors as well. I would say leveraging that federal dollars is important for us. I think it's even more important for our locals when there is opportunity to partner with our locals on these federal discretionary grants. It's a win-win for everyone. And finally, collaborating on our SRRT, that's strategies for reducing railway trespassing. So it's anti-trespassing recommendations that we went out and we did studies across two of our corridors, Central Florida, and then we did it across the FEC corridor from Miami to Cocoa. And we want to gain buy-in from all stakeholders and set some priorities on research recommendations to move forward on it. And we were able to get that done. And we were able to identify some opportunities to improve safety across those corridors as it relates to trespassing. And I'll share with you some of those here in the future slides. Next slide, please. So in our educational efforts, there are just a sample of some of the types of solution FDOT has implemented statewide. Educational to offset cultural impacts is how we want to approach it. It can be difficult to change behavior, but rail safety culture is necessary to save lives. We have Operation Stride, which I talked about with the dynamic envelope emplacement and also, awareness, rail safety awareness campaign that went along with that. We also have Operation Lifesaver, which I am a member of the Operation Lifesaver board for Florida, and they provide technical and outreach support to them, but also provide input and this opportunity for us to partner up and figure out ways to push forward campaigns for safety. Media campaigns, we have a Be Real Smart that you might be familiar with from District 4. Those videos, series, and handouts on rail safety, statewide operations, Stride, social media, et cetera. We are going to push that program, a campaign again. We kind of put it on pause a little bit with COVID, but now it should be starting back up here soon. Local partner education. So partnering with mental health experts. When we did conduct that SRRT study, this is our opportunity to partner with our mental health experts. We developed a task force as part of the trespassing research to provide information and tools for our partners. As a follow-up to our research, we will partner with the mental health experts on suicide prevention training as well. We had our dynamic message signs, our DMS safety messages. We used digital signage to display rail safety messages, and it was a big success during Rail Safety Week last year and the year before that in September. So we want to continue to do that and expand on it, getting that rail safety message out. And then also we have suicide prevention signage with 2-on-1 signs on state-owned rail corridors too that we actually use now. Next slide, please. Let's talk a little bit about enforcement. I think enforcement is just as critical, if not more so, than the education and even the engineering approach. And again, these are just samples of some of the types of solutions we've implemented statewide. We had law enforcement presence at Crossings Partnership as part of a Rail Safety Week. On the board, I was talking about with Operation Lifesaver Board. We actually have Chief Dixon from Florida Highway Patrol that sits on the board, and he provides additional guidance and also connection with the law enforcement throughout the state. So that gives us opportunity to partner with law enforcement to help push some of these safety messages and also start to bring in a wider audience of who needs to be a part of the rail safety conversation. Next slide, please. So the way forward, we've learned a lot by implementing a wide variety of pilot projects and solutions all over the state. I talked about a couple of those. And to provide additional structure going forward, though, we have been working on a matrix of safety strategies, organizing what we found and how do we think about implementing these. Now, keep in mind, I said what we're already doing, like I was talking about with the Section 130 program, open and closure program. These solutions will be on top of those, so it'll be in addition to those. And what we did discover, some of those safety strategies you'll see listed there with pedestrian trespassing, vehicle trespassing, traffic queuing over crossing, and motorist and pedestrian behaviors. This is something in addition to those countermeasures that we discovered. And I'll just talk a little bit about those, what we found in the next slide. Next slide, please. So let's talk about our mitigation of pedestrian trespassing. Stems from a variety of casual causational factors, which includes pedestrians using shortcuts, loitering, making encampments on railroad property, et cetera. So one we would see was pedestrian walkability. In many locations, the fastest route between point A and point B is to walk on railroad property. And we understand that. So trespassing for them saves considerable time for the pedestrian. In these incidents, though, however, it is best to direct pedestrian traffic to a safer crossing point. And so you see improving pedestrian walkability. Now, mitigation strategy, for example, new pedestrian crossing, sidewalk connections, pedestrian gates, barriers to keep pedestrians on the sidewalk. And this is a high level. It has more detail to those approaches, those kind of measures. But just as an example, just to show you. I would say, let's talk about the monitoring. You know, hidden areas such as under overpass or bridges have heightened trespassing. With greater monitoring, railroad dispatch can alert law enforcement and trains of trespasser before an incident. So that monitoring could be also very, very useful. Artificial intelligence monitoring technologies, you know, for strategies, mitigating strategies, looking at CCTV, artificial intelligence for detecting trespassing speakers and lights and transmissions of alerts, for an example. Next slide, please. We also have vehicular trespassing. So for mitigation for that, most common factor in vehicular trespassing are incorrect turns for motorists turning onto the tracks, using railroad properties for parking and for recreation. So this is also an issue when it comes to rail safety. So we were thinking in terms of warning systems, applying striping and delineators over grade crossing, which can reduce incorrect turns onto the tracks. Access, like physical barriers, are also effective for preventing vehicles across, you know, access to the railroads. We also were thinking about how monitoring could help, just as with the pedestrian. Monitoring is help in a helpful way to identify and alert parties of unauthorized vehicles on their property. So that could also be helpful as well. And we talked about the higher speed grade crossing design standards, you know, what we're working on. I think this is also be a part of a solution to the problem, helping resolve those problems. Next slide, please. So we also have traffic queuing over grade crossings for various causal factors. For example, moved queued vehicles. There are guidelines for feet of clear storage distance, and preemption allows traffic to clear prior to train arrival. So that preemption system is designed so that it will allow the traffic to be cleared instead of being queued. So when we did the preemption study, again, identifying where the preemption system were located, and then testing to see if they are operational or in good operation. Upstream, we have when there isn't room to have vehicles clear a crossing using preemption, pre-signal stop traffic before a crossing. So that could also create, even if it doesn't have preemption or pre-signal, there may be some traffic upstream that will cause queuing across that crossing. Block crossing warnings. Warning systems such as LED signs that activate when vehicles stopped within a grade crossing can alert vehicles not to block the crossing. So we were thinking about that could be a mitigating strategy. Escape option. If a vehicle is queued on the tracks, provide a paved refuge space, allow them to clear grade crossing for safety. Next slide, please. So I really want to talk about the motorist and pedestrian behavior, right? Because this one here is really key, because it's a human factor that impacts rail safety. And it makes it more challenging to deploy engineering to offset these. And we try, and we'll continue to try. But we really have to think about the cultural shift. You know, the public needs to be continuously educated to enhance awareness of the hazards and consequences associated with the dangerous actions around the railroads. Florida continues to grow real fast. We know that. We see that demand for transportation grows with that population. We have conflicts between land use types when it comes to residential and transportation. And so we have to be very innovative in making sure that we are doing everything we can on the engineering approach, in which we do, like I've demonstrated to you. But we have to, again, continuously educate our communities on this cultural shift and enhance their awareness on these hazards. Mitigation methods include grade crossing safety outreach. Operation Lifesaver is a part of that. We do that. We also, with our PIO office, we have campaigns that we push to out as well. That's at both at state level and the district levels. You saw when I was talking, I was speaking on the educational piece, like the Be Rail Safe. We have trespass prevention outreach, and we also have suicide prevention training. But again, I think this is important, especially to you as the audience, about how important it is for that cultural shift and making the public continuously making them aware, educating them and enhancing them on that awareness for hazards and consequences associated around these dangerous actions around the railroads.
And Ricky, next slide, if we can please. Have you wrap it up. Oh, good. Thank you.
Yes. So, and this is just to close it out real quick though. I say, what are the next steps? And that's a question. You know, we are about, you know, making things happen and moving forward, but we also like to hear from our stakeholders too as well, and partner with our stakeholders and make sure that what we are doing and what we're saying, our approach is connecting with the locals, is connecting with our districts, is connecting with the federal partners. So it's important for us to say that. So that's what I'll leave you with. You know, if there is anything that you feel like you need to make that connection with us, you know, your District 4 there, you can reach out to them. And with that, I am done.
Thank you, Mr. Fitzgerald. We appreciate the in-depth presentation. One of the things that came up before you came on, I don't know if you were watching our meeting earlier, Vice Mayor Weiss was addressing the issue of our motoring public and their ability to go from east to west, especially when there are problems on the tracks, and how we can communicate those problems to our residents so that they can make plans accordingly. Is there any move afoot to try and have some sort of a uniform system of notification to the municipalities affected?
That's a good question. So, and it's a timely question. So before the pandemic, I was working with this technology company to try to get that an answer to that for block crossing. And so now we're back to that post-pandemic, and we are having some areas tested with this technology. And if it's proved successful, my goal is to try to deploy it where it's needed across the state. So in short, for your answer, that's an effort we have identified that we need to take, and we will. And if it's feasible, based on the study, that what we find the results of the study, we will go ahead and try to deploy it.
Okay. Vice Mayor, did you want to follow up on that?
I did. Thank you very much for your presentation, Mr. Fitzgerald. I guess my question is, in addition to the motoring public, also concerned about our emergency services, and because this last time it was a 2-mile train that had an issue, and it blocked multiple, you know, crossings, and the only way I knew about it was through a post on the Nextdoor app, and I'm concerned, you know, how does that information, is that information being transmitted to our fire rescue folks and to our municipalities? I mean, there's a tremendous, I mean, this was apparently, this closure was for multiple hours.
Yeah. So also there is a law that governs, and it's in a state by state. FRA allowed the states to make up their own laws for if there is a blockage of the crossing and there is an emergency, there is a procedure in place for them to respond by decoupling. and making the ability for the emergency to move through. So we tried, we've responded to that before, and that was a question before. And if there are some problems with any particular railroads that you're having with that, we can be a part of that conversation to try to make sure it's understood that that's how it's supposed to work. So if you have, you know, if you have something that we need to address, we can talk with our partners, the railroads.
I appreciate that. I'm wanting to try and be more prospective looking and proactively looking for, you know, how we can better facilitate these communications, because I don't think it, I don't think it happens automatically.
It doesn't. And when we get those complaints, we deal with them directly. We will make the calls to the railroads and we talk with them. And some municipalities actually deal with them too. They actually have contacts with the railroads that they will call themselves too. And sometimes they reach out to the districts and the districts will do that too.
All right. But either way, nothing, I would just say nothing proactively on your end that's currently implemented.
No, not to, because it's a case by case. It's not because this is not something that should be routine. If it's something that's routine, then yes, but it should not be routine. The proactive part, I guess what we are trying to do it to mitigate block crossing, going back to what I said, deploying that technology and figuring out where we're having these issues to try to be proactive about it in that sense.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Before I recognize Commissioner McKinley, I just wanted to just remind you that the suicide prevention line is changing from 211 to 988. Yeah. So you might be having to update your signs out there. Commissioner McKinley, you are recognized.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. A lot of this presentation has been focused on the coastal rail lines, the tracks along Tri-Rail and the FEC and the Bright Line. And are you also looking at the CSX tracks out west and the U.S. Sugar Corporation track? Because we've got accidents that happen along U.S. 27 out that way that have caused issues too.
So the program I was talking about, the Section 130, it focuses on hazard elimination across the entire state. So that would be a part of that. We also have our inspection program where we have rail inspectors who actually go out and do inspection of all railroad companies in Florida. And a part of the discipline, I mean, it's all about safety. So in a part of discipline, it's about operation, it's about signals, the hazardous materials, the equipment. So we are doing that as well. So the addition to what I talked about with those programs, the studies that we did was one, to see where we were having our most challenging areas, but it also, they are models for us to use across the entire state. We have to prioritize because we are limited in resources. So we have to prioritize based on what the data tells us. But we have a focus that is at statewide regardless.
Okay. When I looked at your list of partners that you had up, I didn't see the U.S. Sugar Rail on that list of partners. We just hope that you would include them in those conversations too, since they roll through the Glades area quite often.
Yeah. Yep. We partner with all the railroads in Florida. We try to stay ahead of the game if there are going to be any issues, and not just talk with them like on a routine basis, like we do every year, every twice a year we'll talk to them. But the districts are in conversation with them constantly, and they understand what's going on in their areas too as well.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Vice Mayor McCloy.
Yes, a question for you. This is follow-up on the issue here in South Florida of blocking east-west traffic if a longer train is stopped, and particularly for the safety vehicles. You mentioned that you know, you're focused not on occasional things, but more on routine ones. Would you be able to provide, or would some part of FDOT be able to provide to the TPA some idea of any statistics you have on how often does this happen, and how often has the decoupling of the trains to provide some openings? That seems like a pretty cool idea. Right. Obviously, if you don't know, if the train doesn't know how long it's going to be delayed, decoupling is a big deal, right. I imagine. On the other hand, blocking, you know, safety vehicles is also a big deal. If you could provide us any data, that would help us, I think.
Yep. So the FRA pushed out a campaign probably about 4 years ago. I did a statewide webinar on it. And what it was asking, because again, it's kind of hard to, it's a case by case. You really just can't project when it's going to happen. And so they were asking for input data from everyone and anyone that had challenges, locals. So I don't think it went very far. Didn't get much input from Florida. And I can go back and check and see if there is some data on it. I do know that there was, you know, one area in Florida that was routine, and, you know, we've done, you know, had some discussions with the railroads on that one. But I don't really know of any others. I can go look it up, but I don't have in my office data that would show where it was some block crossings. I would actually have to try to reach out to the departments to get that. And for instance of when the decoupling happened, pretty much the same. If it happened, it was at that instance it happened, and no one probably recorded it. Maybe the railroad recorded it. Again, I can reach out to them and ask if they'll be willing to help us out with that data. I'd like to see it myself. So that's a good question. I can try to get that for you. I can see what I can find.
Thank you.
Very good. It looks like you have satisfied everybody's inquiries. Margie, do we have anything left? Nope. All right. Well, thank you very much for the presentation. We certainly do appreciate it.
Yes, sir. And if with that data, just anyone that if whatever I find, who would be the contact person?
Why don't you work through our interim executive director, Ms. Nielsen?
Ms. Nielsen, I think you have my information. If you would just send me something, an email or something, where I should send that, or that'll be fine.
Yes, thank you. I'll follow up. We did communicate via email, and I'll follow up with you after this meeting. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Right, thank you.
Let's move on. We now have an item before us that's coming to us from the CAC. This is an environmental research paper, and we're going to offer our guest, Michael Fitzpatrick, about 5 minutes to present this item to us. Mr. Fitzpatrick, you have the floor.
Thank you. First, I'd like to thank the staff for helping put together my PowerPoint. And I'd just like to say yesterday's practice run, it was 8.5 minutes. So I hope you'll grant me that.
All right.
My name is Mike Fitzpatrick, and I was on this board for 3 years in 2013 to 2016. Since then, I have served an additional 6 years on a citizen advisory committee. The reason I am before you today is because I have spent at least 150 hours between November and April writing a report, which is in your agenda packet. The essence of the report is a question: does the Palm Beach Transportation Planning Agency have a responsibility in addressing climate change, specifically to assist in the transportation transition from internal combustion engine powered automobiles and light vehicles to battery electric vehicles, ICE to BEVCs? As written in Florida statutes, there are 7 areas MPOs and TPAs should consider when approving actions. The vote of the Citizen Advisory Committee to bring this to the attention of the governing board was 10-6. Nobody believed climate change is not a major issue, but essentially 4 members did not believe the Citizen Advisory Committee should advise, and 2 members said the TPA should stay in its own lane. The ICE to BEV transition, I believe, can be a factor in three of these seven criteria. But by far the best criteria is number four. Criteria four is often ignored and therefore a lane less traveled. But the issue of ICE to BEV transition clearly addresses the three provisions of criteria four. Nothing says protect and enhance the environment better than stopping 20% of the CO2 pollution of Palm Beach County. Switching to electric motors is the best possible energy conservation, and it will save consumers thousands of dollars annually. At $5 per gallon of gasoline, people are paying roughly 20 cents per mile for fuel. If you get your fuel from at night from FPL, your fuel cost is about 3.5 cents per mile. Getting rid of stinky fuel smells will greatly improve the quality of life for citizens with asthma. Plus, every pound of CO2 not created is roughly a pound of breathable oxygen saved. This is the national breakdown of greenhouse gas production by economic sectors. Since this is the Palm Beach TPA, we're only interested in Palm Beach County percentages. I suspect we are below the national average for heavy industry, and FPL produces a lot of solar energy, so CO2 from electricity is also probably lower than the national average. Therefore, the other sectors must be greater polluters to add up to 100%. Staying in our lane, we are going to look at the sources of pollution in the transportation sector. By far, at 58%, the largest source of pollution from transportation is light-duty vehicles, cars, pickups, and vans. Nationally, this represents 17% of all CO2 pollution. But like we noted with FPL and industry, a logical guess is 20% of Palm Beach County pollution is from light-duty vehicles. How big a problem is this? Each car on the average produces over 10,000 pounds or 5 tons of CO2 per year. Over 1 million light vehicles are registered in Palm Beach County. This means cars in Palm Beach County are producing over 10 billion pounds or 5 million tons of carbon dioxide annually. This is a huge number. What makes the situation worse is CO2 is a very stable molecule. In the atmosphere, it takes 300 to over 1,000 years to break down into carbon and oxygen again. This means nearly every molecule of CO2 produced since 1722 is still in our atmosphere trapping the heat from sunlight. An interesting fact is whether the governing board decides to support, ignore, or oppose this transportation transition, the transition is going to occur. The reason the change is inevitable is because Tesla has produced cars with superior performance. This is a threat to mainstream auto manufacturers. Therefore, the most progressive of the large automobile manufacturers, such as GM, Ford, and Volkswagen, have ceased researching improvements for internal combustion engines. Their CEOs have bet their company's futures on battery electric vehicles. The question now arises, if this is going to happen anyway, why get involved? There are three basic reasons. The first is the blind hand of capitalism will eventually get the job done, but in what time frame? The speed at which the ICE to BEV transition occurs is of critical importance because the current best guess is in about 8 years, irreversible environmental tipping points will occur. Just one example of many points is living soils absorbs and hold water like a sponge. If the Western US mega drought continues, the soil will be dried and baked dead. Dead soil gets crusty. Even if the winter snowpack and summer rains come back, the water will not recharge aquifers, but quickly run off into Colorado and Rio Grande rivers. The US West of 2040 will have more in common with the desert mountains of Morocco than the pine forests of the Rockies of 20 years in the past. I have served on the TPA committees for 9 years because I believe coordinating planning helps our society by speeding up and smoothing out change. Second reason is the average current cost of new cars is over $47,000. By reallocating the cost of new vehicles from ICE to BEV for all of Palm Beach, 1 million plus vehicles is likely to take over a decade and be about $40 billion. No doubt there will be scams and shoddy cars. During this disruptive economic and societal change, where can the citizens of Palm Beach County turn for accurate information? Thirdly, on the flip side, will it become a blame game problem for the TPA if during the biggest personal transportation change since Henry Ford invented the assembly line, the citizens notice an agency named Transportation Planning is not doing any transportation planning on an issue of great personal importance to them? This slide shows how the CAC motion to bring this issue before the governing board was written. This presentation is an informational item. And the executive summary of the report in your backup are four asks. Hopefully enough members of the governing board will see the importance of this problem and pass a motion to one, task the technical advisory committee to perform an in-depth review of the coming disruptive changes. Two, form a subcommittee headed by a governing board member and possibly members and compose of representatives from staff, technical advisory committee, and the advisory committee to consider the future direction of the TPA with regards to global warming. The next two items deal with accurate information to measure goal progress. Three, make an interagency request to the Florida Department of Highway Safety and Motor Vehicles that an accessible report be maintained categorizing Palm Beach County vehicle registrations by make, model, and propulsion type. Four, govern.
Mr. Fitzpatrick, I'm going to ask you a question, and you really have used up your time. You're making some requests to us right now that don't appear on the slide. Are you making your own personal requests or the CAC requests?
These were in the executive report. They basically messed up and didn't have this one slide that has those. They are on page 2 of the 78-page report under executive summary.
All right, let's offer an opportunity for board members if they have some questions for Ms. Fitzpatrick with respect to this. I'm going to make one comment first because I don't see any cards up. I think this TPA has addressed the issue of the changing environment as far as our motoring public. We have certainly encouraged EVs. Today, you saw we had the dump the pump proclamation. And while that's just a proclamation, that certainly is demonstrating that we are working with our partners at both PalmTran, at TriRail, at Brightline, to encourage people to give up their gas guzzling internal combustion passenger vehicles and go to an alternate mode of transportation. I'm not sure what you are really hoping that this body is going to be able to do, because on many of these areas, I think we're preempted. A lot of the decisions as far as what is going to happen as far as requiring mileage, the level of mileage that needs to be for a vehicle, which would, of course, encompass the idea of pushing people towards EVs, is at a federal or a state level. We are going to be talking about incorporating in our TIP more infrastructure that will support EVs. And I think that if you have listened before, our public transportation sector, especially PalmTran, and I see Clinton Forbes is here, our executive director, we are doing electrification of those vehicles as well. So I think from our point of view, we understand the need to migrate away from internal combustion towards EVs or public transportation. So I think we are taking those steps, maybe not as rapidly or and I don't see where a study group or a separate group to just address this one subject is really going to be beneficial. So I'm going to defer to my colleagues, and I see the vice mayor has got his card up.
Thank you. I did read the report with quite a bit of detail yesterday and again some this morning. My position is, as an environmental scientist who's followed climate change for probably 30, 40 years and has actively been involved in personally and as an elected official in various ways on it, With all due respect, I would differ slightly in the sense that I cannot overstate the urgency. And one of the things that I deal with a lot is some problems are very visible. Crashes on the railroad is, you can't not see them. Increasing CO2, I happen to know that in my lifetime, it's gone from about 300 parts per million to over 400 now parts per million. Well, that's nice. I can't see it, neither can anybody else see it. You can measure it, but it's a very difficult thing to get in front of people. And in that sense, and yet the effects of it are huge all over the planet. So, and the timing, I think, you know, it's been pointed out by any number of things, IPCC and others, that we don't have the time to do, you know, smaller level things. We have an urgency planet-wide to do something. I would say the way to look at it is sort of a no stone unturned approach from the TPA. I think the point that was made that citizens looking at an agency that's called transportation planning, that has both transportation and planning in the name, there is a reasonable expectation. What are you folks doing on climate change? And to come back to the no stone unturned, are you doing as much as possible? We recognize, I certainly as a city official, recognize the preemptions, home rule issues, all those sorts of things limit us. But let's make sure that we are pushing as hard as possible, that we are at a minimum asking our partner agencies for the data that we need. There have been a number of specific data requests that we don't even know what the numbers are. That we look at how we're going to deal with the gas tax thing, a very real funding issue, and I think a sensible point made that, well, you don't want to just slide that over to electric vehicles. At this point, for societal and global reasons, we want to be doing everything possible to enhance that transition. And looking at you know, the slide for Norway and seeing that Sweden is right next to it in its progress, Germany close behind. Norway is at 96% new vehicle purchase of EVs right now. They did that by policy moves early on. The federal government is doing some of them. Let's make sure that we have, again, research to make sure that any angles we can take, that we're on it. That would be my recommendation, very sincerely. Again, as a scientist who reads the literature, who follows this stuff, if anything, what you see in the popular press probably underestimates. We keep finding as scientists things that we go, oh my gosh, I didn't even think about that one. And feedbacks that make things even more of a concern. So I would urge us to look into it.
Mayor Pinto?
Yeah, this is a... Climate change has been one of my topics that I probably talk about probably at least once a week with various people, both at the city level and in citizens. It is an important issue for us from a global standpoint, but I'm going to put a couple of things in context. One is, I don't think this is something that is an actionable item to create another committee to look at for the TPA. But I will say that we should encourage all of our cities, as we are in my city, to look at a strategy or begin developing a strategy where we can do something about it at the local city level. And that is a strategy to convert our fleet, our truck and vehicle fleets that we use, to EVs. I know it's something that we're looking at and working on. I would encourage other cities to consider that, at least start the conversation and development strategy. That would make a difference and move us in the right direction. A point of information that was shared in the presentation, I think you said the average cost for new cars today is $47,000.
Correct.
Here's the economic reality, okay? And I've been saying this, I don't know for how many years now. We will see a tremendous shift to the EV model in use when the auto industry gets the price point closer to where people normally would spend to buy a new Honda, all right? It's got to be in that price point range. And I'm telling you, watch the dial, it will move. When the industry moves to that point, I think the industry recognizes that. I believe earnestly that they are you know, working towards that. If you just look at the competition that they're creating, where every major automaker is putting new EV model automobiles in the marketplace. So as that trend continues, that's a very positive thing. And that's what's really going to move the needle to get us to a major shift point of, you know, having more EVs running around and less internal combustion, ICE, as they call them, ICE engines. The other initiative, I think, going back to what we could do at the city level, not at the TPA level, is moving to have infrastructure put in place to service EVs so that they can charge up. We've already been working on that. We've worked with FPL. They have a program in place, I think, where they're looking to work with cities to do that. I encourage that. I think that's, once again, the price point and the general public feeling that EV charging stations are going to be readily available for them will move us in the direction that we need to go. So,
thank you. Before I get to the vice chair, you know, it's funny today, as I was driving in today in my EV, I heard on the news that FPL has said that they are going to be having a zero carbon emissions footprint by 2045, that they are looking to even eliminate the natural gas, which is the predominant driver of their generators right now, and using technologies that would convert water to hydrogen, that would use solar. And so I think market forces are much of what is going to drive this. And I'm not sure that us stepping up and demanding accurate accounting of the amount of greenhouse gas pollutants is either our place or it's going to change anything. I think the fact that people paying $5 and $6 a gallon gas is making them look at the potential of that crossover point that Mayor Pinto mentioned. You know, at some point you look at the economics versus I'm helping the environment. You say it's cheaper to drive that EV than having to stop at the gas station and seeing the, you know, $100 worth of gas going into my car. So I'm, again, I commend you for your thoughts, but I'm not sure that there is a place for us to do more than we're doing now. And certainly setting up another committee is just setting up another committee. And I'm not sure it advances what we're trying to do.
Mayor, if I can make a comment, I just wanted to know, since Mayor Flores stepped out, the board has lost an in-person quorum. So okay. They're no longer able to take an action on it.
All right, very good. So we'll continue to have, and this is, it was billed as an information item. So we're probably not going to go more than just a discussion. If there is some sentiment here to make this an action item, we can then return this to the agenda at our next meeting. Did you want to speak, Vice Chair?
Yeah, I was just going to say, it was nice to see you, by the way. Thank you for what you're doing. Your passion's obvious, and we appreciate you bringing it to us. And I think it's something that's on the foreground of anyone who's an elected official in the state of Florida or this country or in this world. And we're all working on it. So what you're doing is good. It is valid. However, I don't know if this is the place for it. And trust me, I spend most of my time working on sustainability and environmental initiatives. There are places for where the time and effort that you've taken could actually make more of a difference for the 78 pages and the hours and years of research behind you. I don't know if the TPA is the place to bring it, because even just looking at our tip, you saw how much of the spending was going towards interstates and turnpikes. I mean, you approved it at the CAC, right? So on our tip, how much of it is the TPA really managing? So if you look at what the TPA board is putting onto the tip, we're putting on the local initiatives, we're putting on the transportation alternatives, we're putting on the SMS. That's what we can do. And if you look at that list of what the TPA board has brought forward onto the tip, it's sidewalks, it's electrification for the buses, it's shelters, it's everything multimodal, it's everything that you're talking about. This board is doing it. And I think for all of your efforts, as we said before, we are so preempted in doing any of this. There are places you can go where your words will be heard and have an impact that could be much more immediate than the few months you've waited to show up here on an information item. So I would encourage you to continue what you're doing, but realize that the TPA does plan, prioritize, and fund transportation projects, which we are doing. It's not a monitoring company. You're asking for a monitoring of emissions. You're asking for a monitoring of vehicles, things like that. That's not what this organization, which is paid for by the taxpayers, this is not what we do. There are places that can do that. So I would encourage you to go there with your information and make a bigger impact more quickly. And as far as the policy in Norway, that wasn't made by a county board. That was probably made at a national level. And as far as municipalities, the city of Palm Beach Gardens, almost our entire fleet of code enforcement's electric. We just redid our glitches to include electric vehicles in all of our parking. We've redone our transit-oriented development ordinance to include all of this, including keeping 50% green space in our city. We're doing all these things. So if you're trying to, I don't know what your point is. Are you trying to educate the elected officials so that we go back to our municipalities to do these things? Because you're asking the TAC to take on monitoring. So I'm a little confused about what you're asking in the first place too, that could actually be actionable within the time period you're trying to accomplish this.
Okay. To address some of the issues brought up. First of all, as Mayor Pinto pointed out, there is change. And one of the things I was going to say is point out is my understanding. I've been told that the city of Boca Raton is currently transitioning their municipal fleet to battery electric vehicles, which I understand West Palm Beach. And now I know City of Palm Beach Gardens is also moving in this direction. But what about
We already did it. We did it. We're not moving. Well, we did it.
I'm thinking that some of the other municipalities don't have the staff resources to actually do this. And I was one of the possibilities is that a staff on this transportation planning agency could help the other smaller municipalities have the granular knowledge of how you bring about that kind of change in your budget and on your codes and so forth like that. So there is a planning portion there. And the other point I was hoping is that maybe some of this could be pulled together. Thank you. It's, as you pointed out, it's all through the budget. Perhaps there could be a little editing so it's all together in one place. He gave me one. It's not helping.
Yeah, we got him one while you were looking. So all right, let's make it easier on you.
So, and as is pointed out, yeah, I'll quit. And as pointed out, the national level isn't doing anything. At some point, they're going to have to do something. And at that point, the spigot's going to open and flow down just like it does for federal dollars for transportation. So the local organizations that are better prepared are going to get more of that money and allocate it better. So I would hope there'd be some proactive, like,
and again, I think like the vice chair said, we are being proactive, and I don't want you to lose your voice and feel that you're not getting anything accomplished, because there is movement. The county while I've been there for the last 4 years has moved towards putting in the infrastructure for basically EV vehicles to be able to charge. I know when I was in Boca, we did the same thing. I know in Del Rey, they've done the same thing. And of course, we just heard from the vice chair. This is going to happen, but it's not going to happen that we're going to be the ones to power it. I see Richard Radcliffe sitting in the audience. He is with the League of Cities. And I think that that is an opportunity for you, again, to bring this forward so that all the municipalities have the benefit of this thought, and maybe even that you are able to help facilitate them moving forward. But this body really has one mission, and that is to take the money that's coming from up there and be able to channel it into the projects we prioritize. And we are prioritizing with an eye towards the future, electrification, and getting people out of their motor vehicles. So I think we're doing what you want, not necessarily in a fashion that you've outlined in these four action items. Valerie, did you want to talk? And then I'll go back to the vice mayor.
Sure. Thank you for the presentation. I just wanted I think echo a bit of the other remarks made in terms that we are a planning agency. We exist to collaboratively plan, but we're really prioritizing these state and federal dollars for the things that we can prioritize for, which in that process, we do have scoring and prioritization points for environmental projects, for sustainable materials, for electric vehicles. So we are trying to prioritize projects that do move the needle, however, and encouraging more sustainable modes of transportation. However, we are not an authoritative body. We don't own or operate or can control really anything. So in the realm that we exist, we are trying to move that needle and want to continue to explore that. And that is a priority for the federal government resiliency and something that we're looking into are incorporating more and more, especially with our new 2050 long-range transportation plan that we're going to be getting started on soon. So we really appreciate the input and the information as well. So I just wanted to mention that.
Vice Mayor, I will give you the last word and then we're going to cut this down. Or cut this off.
Sounds reasonable. Just a couple comments. A comment was made that the marketplace will take care of this problem. Not an unreasonable theory, but look at Norway. They have the same vehicles available, the same marketplace available, and yet they're way ahead of us. That was government policy that got it there. If you look at states and their performance on renewable energy over the last couple of decades, the states that have strong renewable energy credit programs, a government policy, are the ones that advanced. The other ones didn't. New Jersey is not particularly sunshiny, and yet they have some of the best adoption of solar power because of government policy. It's wonderful that municipalities are and other groups are changing over their fleets. The issue is scale. Here, the question is, are there any stones that are not being overturned yet that we can do to try to influence this at the scale of the million plus inhabitants of the county, the fleets that go with a given municipality? It's wonderful. It's a leading thing. We should definitely do it, but that's not going to move the needle on carbon emissions. That's one of the things that you know, our policies, our words, are those things, our statements about things. The planet CO2 levels don't really care about that. They want to see what can you do to, at scale, push these numbers down on CO2 emissions. And again, I would urge us to not look for reasons why we're, you know, doing a lot, because we are as an organization. I respect that. Can we do more? Are there things that we can look at that would help move this faster?
Michael, thank you for bringing this forward. I think you have found at least one ally up here that I would work through. Vice Mayor McVoy certainly has the ability to bring something onto the agenda. If we could, you know, formulate something that we could really do that's not just going to be window dressing. So I think that I would like to ask you to continue your thoughts on this and, maybe reach out to our friends in the city of Lake Worth Beach to see if there's some way that we couldn't put something together that we feel comfortable as a board would be a step that we could take.
So I have permission to like bother Valerie a little bit and talk to her and put something
together.
Well,
I hate to say bother, but you certainly have the ability to reach out and discuss this with Valerie. But I would actually tell you that Vice Mayor McVoy is probably a better avenue right now. Okay. He seems to have the technical ability and also the inclination to see this move forward. So that would probably be the best. And I thank you again for taking the time to come up here today.
Thank you. And the reason I came here, because I believe this is the most concentrated political power in Palm Beach County, or the most voting members.
Thank you. All right.
I'll follow up just to say that one of the actions that was on the screen from the CAC was for TPA staff to further look into how these recommendations or other things could fit into our plans and policies. So that is something that the our staff is going to be looking into and reporting back to the CAC on that.
All right. And I would encourage you and Vice Mayor McVoy to work on this. And again, I'm not discounting this as a priority or an imperative. And, I'm happy to be taking my $7,500 federal credit for having just, gotten another EV. And I I encourage anybody who is thinking about going to an EV to try them out, because they're terrific. And as I say, I love driving by gas stations. So based on that, we're going to move on to item C, which is going to be the TPA operating procedures. I will remind you, we have a hard stop at noon. I would really like to be out of here by 11:30. So let's see if we can't do
that. Noon. Okay, thank you. Now, that should be the quickest presentation today. So I'm just going to have a brief overview of our operating procedures as it relates to our advisory committees. It was a request from you all last meeting to just give a brief overview of what the purposes are and then how they're structured. So we have three advisory committees here at the TPA. Two of them are required by law. It's the Technical Advisory Committee and the Citizens Advisory Committee. And then we also have a Vision Zero Advisory Committee. The first one, the Technical Advisory Committee, is like what it says. It's really about technical staff from our various municipalities in the county. It's supposed to include planners, engineers, other types of transportation authorities. And their role and function is really about that technical review, and they focus a lot more on that. Performance measures, our priority lists that come to you all as well, the TIP, they're looking into those, and they also see different design plans when FDOT is coming for an interchange or other types of plans, they're reviewing those. The membership is not really limited to the number of, to a number, right? So we can have people who are not serving on this board from different jurisdictions. And so all I have to do is request for that to be added to you all agenda. And then if you approve that, they'll be members of the of this TAC committee. And we have 26 current members. The newer ones, which are ones that are not a part of this this board, are City of Westlake and then also the Town of Lake Park. They both added members recently. The next is the Citizens Advisory Committee. And so this is really having that citizen's eye on ongoing transportation issues and looking at it from their lens. This board, though, is one member per representative on our governing board, right? So you all have the ability to elect one member for that board. We currently have four vacancies. In statutes, we are required to show representation of minorities, elderly, and persons with disabilities. So when we're requesting for you all to make your nominees for that board, to consider those, and then also consider other types of groups in the community. So environmental, business, construction, development, freight and goods, and private transportation. There's currently 17 of 21 seats filled, so we only have four vacancies right now. Next is the Vision Zero Advisory Committee. This one really focuses on safety elements and also our most vulnerable users, so our pedestrian bicycle users of the roadway in our transportation network. So really, they do a lot of technical work as well, just like TAC, but a little bit more of a lens on safety and then bicycle and pedestrian users. They also, this is a board just like TAC where there's no member structure of a set members. So same thing, you can have any type of request from outside agencies who are not part of the TPA. Currently 18 members, and one of the newer ones is the City of Lake Worth Beach CRA. You know, we just restructured this committee to be more focused on safety. And with that, we are still reaching out to find law enforcement and fire rescue services to be members as well. And the last two slides I have for you is really about something new that was adding to the operating procedures recently that you all approved. I'm just gonna give you an example from the TAC, but it's the same language for all the committees. And so this is how do items get added to the committee agendas. So if a member wanted to add an item, and let's, in this example, a TAC member wanted to add an item to the agenda during public comments or sort of the committee comments in that meeting beforehand, they can request that to be added to the next agenda. And if the committee approves, they can show that work product or item at the next meeting. And then adding items to your agenda when it comes from the committees. So just like the last presentation, the structure for this is the member provides that presentation to the their committee, and then that committee can elect to adopt or approve that to move to you all for a presentation or any other format, whether it's going to be a paper or through an email, whatever matter of format it should be presented. That's sort of something we just added because we didn't have that structure in our operating procedures beforehand. And that's all I have for you. Quick presentation. Any questions?
Any questions? You did a thorough, erudite job.
All right.
Thank you. All right. let's move right along because we are slipping away from not even having a, certainly we're past the point of having a quorum here, but like to have a few people in the room as we finish these last items. So let's do partner agency update. Clinton, I see you sitting there very patiently. What's going on at PalmTran? Push your button until you see the red.
Mr. Chair, members, good afternoon. Clinton Forbes, Executive Director of PalmTran. Just very briefly, we just wanted to share with you some good news, and that is there's a direct correlation with high gas prices and increased ridership on PalmTran. We are experiencing, it was a slow creep, you know, kind of recovering out of the pandemic. Now it's really on an upward trajectory in terms of ridership. And so more people are trying transit, looking for other alternatives other than driving all the time. And we're seeing approximately 1,000 additional trips a day during the weekday as of April, May. So, you know, we're not drivers, especially those folks who don't have EVs, are not that excited about the high gas prices, but we are benefiting from that in terms of ridership. So we are not resting on our laurels. We are not wishing our riders come back. We are actively working to get our riders back and find new ones. And so we just wanted to share with you really briefly. I want to bring up Joe Harrington, who is our interim director of support services and leadership in our marketing area. What we're doing in terms of, asking people to try transit. And so some of our innovative commercial spots we just wanted to share with you real briefly. Joe.
Thank you so much, Mr. Forbes. Good morning again to the board. Through the chair, I'm Joe Harrington, the interim director of support services for PalmTran. We're so excited to be here this morning and be able to have the opportunity to share a couple of marketing pieces with you. Study after study at PalmTran and survey after survey really shows that the two main factors in motivating individuals to try transit are really the value of it and the convenience. And as many on this board know, we introduced the Paradise Pass, which if you don't have on your smartphone, you should definitely download. It turns your phone into a bus pass and really makes riding the bus even more convenient and fun. And so we have a couple spots that are airing on local television we want to play for you this morning. And one is fairly straightforward. And the first one, Mr. Forbes kind of came to me and said, Joe, I want you to do something that's kind of a departure and come up with like a funny TV spot. And I said, I'm kind of like, I'm owning being a government bureaucrat. I'm not that funny. So you'll have to let us know if we hit the mark or not. And in the interest of time, we'll just play them back to back. So if we want to hit it, Cassidy.
Change the way you pay.
With PalmTran's Paradise Pass reloadable smart card, simply scan and go to pay your fare. It's that easy. Or download our free Paradise Pass app. Your phone becomes your bus pass when you just scan the screen.
I just changed the way I pay.
Download the app today. Change the way you pay and let PalmTran do the driving.
I think you did good.
Perfect. And here's more straightforward.
Go ahead.
Rising gas prices have you stressed? This is the perfect time to give PalmTran a try. Save on gas, get your Paradise Pass. Get to any destination in Palm Beach County for just $2 per trip or ride all day long with our $5 day pass. Save on gas, get your Paradise Pass. From Jupiter to Boca, Belgrade to Palm Beach, for work, school, medical appointments, shopping, or a leisure day at the beach. Ride with us on over 30 routes, 2,983 stops. Save on gas. Get your Paradise Pass. Plan your trip on our mobile app or website by using the Trip Planner. When gas prices spike, our fares remain the same price. Load $5 and get $5 to your contactless reloadable smart card or mobile app with promo code SAVE5. PalmTran. Same fare with great service always.
Save on gas. Get your Paradise Pass.
I did notice your cameo.
Yes, I'm expecting a call from Hollywood any day. And special thanks to my staff who, when they work for PalmTran Marketing, they get to also be actors. So the next Julia Roberts could be up there. We don't know. This is airing on WPTV News Channel 5 and also some of our partner television stations. So thank you so much for your attention.
Well, I would expect you to tell us a little bit more about tomorrow.
Yes, I'm happy to do so, Mr. Mayor. Tomorrow is Dump the Pump Day, and when you get that Paradise Pass app for your phone, you're going to put in the word value tomorrow only. We're going to give you $6 to ride the bus, and that is enough to take unlimited rides that day for free on PalmTran. Of course, we're partnering with our partner agencies, which include TriRail, to really encourage people to, you know, explore the region. And if tomorrow is not a convenient day for you, you can redeem that promo code tomorrow, the word value, on your Paradise Pass, and you can actually use that another day of your choosing that's perhaps more convenient. If you have to work tomorrow, perhaps the weekend is a better option. But we want everybody to dump the pump. I don't know about you. I'm jealous of your electric vehicle. That's going to be my next car after I pay for all the, you know, disaster things at my house. I will, that's what I want to invest in. And of course, we're all tired of the high gas prices. And as has been mentioned many times, it's so important to reduce that carbon footprint.
Thank you, Joe. And we do appreciate your PSA.
Thank you.
Anybody else? Okay, you are released. Okay, I see Mr. Bonlaren is here. Did you want to pick? No, you're happy. SFRTA, anybody from SFRTA going once, going twice? Any of our partner agencies? Nobody is racing to the phone. We are done with our partner agency updates. We're now going to administrative items. Routine reports. There are reports that you have been given that don't really need any discussion unless someone here left at this point. You hearty souls have some sort of need to review this. All right. Our next meeting is going to be July 21st, 2022. I remind you, it looks like that may be the meeting where we are going to make a decision on our permanent director. Now, I'm going to point out that it's a meeting of NACO, which means I am going to stay in town until that meeting so that I will be going out west late because of this vote. I'm sure most of my colleagues, unfortunately, will be out west at the NACO meeting. So it's going to be important that everybody who can be here so we have a quorum, we can have a conversation about this very important subject and hopefully make a decision and be able to move forward with a permanent director. That being said, is there any last words for good and welfare? Seeing none, we are adjourned. Thank you, everybody.